Hello everyone, it's Richard Lewis here with another vlog from the Major, and it's a little bit later in the day. I've had a bit of a lie-in today. It's about 8 a.m. at the time of recording this, and a little bit, starting to feel the schedule now. All I've done for like 4 days or something is kind of just be on air and or be asleep. I've existed in two states, This is a little bit strange and. Your immune system kind of takes a hammer in when you're in that position. It's a little bit croaky. I'm going to try and take it easy today, so I'm fresh for the Fox Theatre. But I'll be heading off out and doing some media stuff. That's probably something we don't really talk about a lot, media requirements. I've been like an interviewer and a journalist, for a long, long period of time. And it's interesting being on the other side of the fence. Whenever there's a big event now for Turner, I kind of have that trust of the company to not say stupid things or marginally less stupid things than maybe I used to. I don't know. So I kind of get put in to do a lot of interviews, in the build up to the major. I think I did like four or five in a single day. Sometimes with mainstream publications, sometimes with community publications. I got a bunch booked, and yeah, this is something that kind of comes with the territory. And all of our talent, that we hire, they make themselves available as well. So it's a good way to kind of hype up the finals, and just engage with the community. But most important is obviously talking to the mainstream media, which every time there's a big event. They kind of poke their heads out and they want to see what's going on, and with varying degrees of positivity, I will say. I've been in a few positions where I've been asked some very leading questions, unfortunately, because I've been a journalist, sometimes even asked leading questions myself, because that's the game. I kind of know how to wriggle my way out of them and not take the bait. But the standard stuff. Obviously, people still want to talk about this gambling issue. We saw an ESPN special recently, and the timing of which I thought was, it's just a little bit like meh. Like you're late to the party. You weren't interested when it was happening. Just before the World Championships, you want to drop a special about how Counter-Strike is corrupting the youth. I mean, don't get me wrong, because that was the general thrust of the article. But don't get me wrong. I think timing, it could actually be fortuitous. We already went past 1 million viewers in the group stages. I don't know if that's been done before. It must have been. I think people would have made a much bigger deal if it was like some record or whatever. I don't know if we'll hit the viewing record, but the fact that we're still hitting 1 million in group stage games across all streams, I think that puts to bed any of this bullshit about it being a dead game. And actually, to be doing that without skins gambling. That's a hell of an achievement. So all of the naysayers and doom prophets are just wrong. I mean, you're talking shit. There's no statistical basis for what you're saying. But yeah, I'm a bit weary of the gambling thing in terms of having to address it and go out there and kind of say, look, definitely some bad stuff happened and mistakes were made, misjudgments were made. But that's not what Counter-Strike's about. It was never what it was about. That was something that was tagged on to something that was already fucking awesome, Like you don't kind of judge something by the additions, the bells and whistles. Like look at the core, look at what it's really about. So that's a little bit weary. There's a lot of questions about gender in gaming as well right now, and I just don't engage with the identity politics stuff. My views on it are quite clear. That I think esports is open to all. I think people have varying ideas on the best way to approach that and to encourage diversity. But I think everyone's on the same page that it's like we don't want tokenism, we do want genuine diversity. But esports is one of the most welcoming and diverse communities in my experience, anyway. That's my standpoint on it. So yeah, there's some people who kind of come in and I think they're less interested in kind of helping grow the scene and just more interested in some kind of headlines. But that again, it comes with the territory. I'll never condemn people for doing that. Like it's, I think that just comes with the territory now in modern journalism. So it's a lot more exciting when you get to meet like actual journalists who are genuinely interested. And that's happened a few times that, you know, I've talked to journalists from like the LA Times and stuff, and there's people out there that are genuinely interested in esports, find it fascinating subculture the same way I did, because, you know, that's the journey I took. I was somebody from outside of it. I was a journalist, an aspiring writer, and I discovered this and I wanted to get involved and I stayed here, you know. So I think that'll happen. They're the more exciting interviews. That's what I like to do. So we've got a full media day today and a full rehearsal. Obviously, we've got lots lined up for the Fox Theatre. I don't know if this is a spoiler or if I'm supposed to say it, but fucking I'll say it. We've actually got Emmy award-winning directors for this show. We're bringing in. There's a few people who I don't know if they've worked on the regular E-League show, but there's a few people that are coming because it's a live show and we want to really make it amazing. So we've got some, you know, slight alterations and tinkering within the crew. We're obviously keeping all the existing E-League staff and everything, but I think there's a few people coming in to really make sure we do this awesome job. And I've seen Valve around the studios. They've been kind of in a little room, not too far from, I think, the green room. And, you know, they seem to be very happy with the way things have been going so far, which is awesome. Super happy that they're happy. That's the most important thing, you know. When we got the major, it was a big endorsement of what E-League's been doing. You know, we haven't been in the space as long as a lot of companies, and to get a major 1 year in to what we're doing is pretty, as like I say, it's a fantastic endorsement. So definitely happy about that. And yeah, I think everything's been going well. A few technical issues. I don't want to make excuses and say that's going to happen. We are looking at making sure that definitely doesn't happen for the later stages. And just, but I think the one thing we have done is when there's been delays, I don't necessarily think it's shown on the broadcast. What's actually interesting is I've done obviously TV now, and I've done esports events. When there's a delay in an esports event, and you're filling, right? And filling's when we just talk, you know, and you can tell, oh, hang on, they said the game is about to go live, but 20 minutes we're talking about whether Config's a good player or not. That's when we're filling. I'm sure you know, I'm sure the more aware of you out there know when it's happening. But I've worked at mainstream esports events, obviously won't name names, but when we're filling, we never talk about the, we never say there's an error, or rather it's been drilled into me. Don't say there's a tech problem. Don't say we're getting DDoSed. You know, don't mention it. Don't mention the bad stuff. We don't want that. We don't want that going out to the community. So don't say anything. Sit there, fill. Hopefully the game starts soon. That's the prevailing sentiment in mainstream esports events. Meanwhile, when we're doing E-League, I get someone in my ear, tell everyone at home we've got a tech error. All right, okay. So we do. We're really, really transparent. And the crazy thing is, as well, I don't even think our fill sections are that long, because what we do is they don't want us just static on a desk just talking, which is the east again the esports norm. I actually quite like it. You know, I like to fucking talk. But we get told, right, you know, we're gonna quickly go to a commercial break. We're gonna find out what's happening. Then we're gonna come back and we'll probably just run a feature. And I think the one area we've really done well in is that when we've had that downtime, those slight delays, and I say slight because I think we put all the time together for the delays. I think it's pretty small in comparison to other events. I think what we've done a great job of is having content there. Yeah, some of it's reruns and repeats and whatnot, but having like evergreen content, fresh content that can go out. You know, if you miss something on day one and there's a delay and we show it on day two, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing for the purposes of the broadcast. So, yeah, I think we've done lots of stuff right. We've received a lot of positive feedback. So it's been enjoyable so far, even if it's been, you know, long days, tough days. Yeah, you know how it is. The schedule can be quite punishing for people on the desk, because you have to be there and watch all the games and talk, and you start the show and you end the show. Commentators obviously can, you know, come and go, do their games, go have a rest back at a hotel. So let's talk about what you really want to hear about, I imagine, which is the fucking matches yesterday, which is what yesterday was where predictions went to die. I think in my predictions, I think I got them all wrong. I think I actually went 0-6. Obviously, I couldn't predict the redraws, so there were nine games. And I think I probably honestly making the snap predictions, just talking to Jason and Duncan, I think I probably fucking got them wrong as well. I think the Astralis Team Liquid one was an easy to call, but easy one to call. But I definitely had Optic. Whatever. Fucking. We'll get into that. Let me just bring up the first game, which was G2 versus North, and I had G2 winning that one. Now they definitely kind of. I mean, it's hard to tell whether G2 had a good draft here or not because the remaining maps were Nuke and Overpass, and I think this has been one of the prevailing issues with G2 is that when the randomizer's been there, it's like they've the V they don't have a deep enough map pool to not be reliant on the randomizer by the end. That's pretty much the situation they've been in, and I think every time there's been the randomizer, it's been the least favorable option for them. I don't I thought G2 looked okay on Nuke when they played Virtus Pro. And I know they've played Overpass and had some good results on Overpass. I definitely think they're a better Overpass team than a Train team. That goes without saying. But I still wonder if maybe Nuke coming up might have been better here. Maybe not. I don't know. But I did have G2 winning this one. And there's a lot of factors here as to why I don't think they did. I mean, first of all, I just feel they've been playing these maps where having a top-tier sniper is vitally important and makes all the difference. I think Overpass definitely counts as one of those. And I'm gonna have to say it. I don't want to, but Smith just isn't good enough. He just isn't good enough. And it really told. There were numerous instances where he wasn't able to make important kills. And I keep saying it, your AWPer, it's too important a position to be underperforming. When you're like, oh, he's our AWPer and a support player. Right, okay. Well, you've hamstrung yourself. You're never going to be a top team. Sorry, it's not going to work. It's a vitally important position. It's like saying, oh, we've got a quarterback, but he can't throw the ball. What's the fucking point? Oh, great. Well, I can hand it to the running back. What's the point? What's the fucking point in that? Get yourself a quarterback who can throw. So, I've known Eduardo a long time. I think this is his swan song based on the rumors, and he's going to move to coaching soon. I think he'll be very suited to coaching. A lot of things that people don't know about him is he's a very conscientious guy. He actually does do a lot of looking after the team just naturally. He's an older guy, he's mature, he's a lot, a fun guy, never gets stressed, never gets upset. It's very rare you see him kind of crack and lose his composure. And I think he'd be well suited to coaching and certainly management and beyond. And definitely wish him every success in that because Eduardo, as I said, is a great guy. I've known him a long, long time, and we definitely might differ on some of our views. When it comes to the game, but there's no disputing that he has all the attributes to being an incredible coach. But yeah, in this game, I thought it told a little bit. I don't think this was a polished North by any stretch of the imagination, but the key differences for me are everything I said about Rubino in my other vlogs were just underlined here. I mean, this guy, I think he's a sleeper pick for MVP in North. Honestly, Magic's yes, he'll get the statistics. Config has finally woke up and started doing the flamboyant stuff on day four and posting big numbers. Rubino's been solid. I mean, and as I keep saying, he's the guy who digs them out of the hole. When a round looks lost and the opponents have that numerical advantage, it's Rubino that usually pops up with a play, with a flash, with some clever utility, or with some kills. And gets them back in the round. I mean, he is the middle of the round guy. He is unbelievable at what he does. And yes, when the unit is malfunctioning, Rubino is the guy who will most acutely feel it. Nobody has the expectation for MSL to post big numbers. Don't think that's ever going to happen. Rubino, sure, he has those bad games. That's when everyone comes out and says, you know, you should get yourself another Danish star, get Valde in. Like, fuck no, that would be a clusterfuck. Like, I think Valde is an amazing player, gonna have a big 2017. Rubino, though, is the fucking glue. I like, you take away the fucking glue and put in another star player, this team's fucked. I mean, utterly fucked. So, yeah, hopefully people are going to start giving him props. I've been saying that for like 3 months. You can go back on broadcasts and watch. Like, I understand very acutely what makes a good support player. And Rubino, for me, is kind of at that level now where a vintage Zipnix was. That's how highly I rate him. I don't know if people agree or feel the same way, but hopefully people are starting to become converts. So, over at G2, Shox definitely performed well. I'm looking forward to seeing him in this French shuffle. I think he's getting back to his best. RPK really surprised me. Thought he had a great tournament. Looks like he will be missed out in the French shuffle. Very interesting to see what will happen to him because this is a player who's already retired once. He is getting old in Counter-Strike terms. And I think there's still some juice in the tank. If he can play like this, he'll go do a job for somebody. Now, one of the famous things is RPK needs to be micromanaged, but we'll see. I think a strong in-game leader. I mean, if we take the constituent parts of what's left over from the French shuffle, I think you can still make a very functional team. Happy RPK, you know, that's a pairing that I could maybe see working if they can get along. I mean, again, you never know with French personalities. I thought Body has been good. I think this has really established him as a top-tier French player, as if people didn't know. But there's just too many weaknesses, and I've talked about Smiths. I won't labour the point. Smiths was the statistically worst player at this major, below Spidey. So let that sink in. Okay, there's no justification for this anymore, guys. I know it's not nice to stick the boot in, but that is just the fact of the matter. And you're gonna have to wake up to that fact. You gotta stop judging people's performances based on feelings and based on whether they're nice guys or not. The reality is he has been beyond subpar. And unfortunately, there's no forgiveness in Counter-Strike at the elite level. There just isn't. With that in mind, Scream, what the fuck, like, you know, what the fuck? I guess this whole French shuffle thing has really got to him because he looked distracted. I've always thought Scream was an emotive player anyway. When he's feeling the game, his aim is incredible. When he's motivated, happy, everyone's high-fiving. He always seems to be better than he is. I've never really liked this style of play that he has because I think it looks good, but I don't think it is optimal. I don't think it's effective. I think when you are going for one taps at range, great. You know, having that ability to do that is phenomenal. One bullet aim is in itself a talent. When it comes to holding down bomb sites and you're getting rushed and getting flashed and you're still peeking and going for the one taps at mid to close range, you're going to get wrecked every time by somebody who sprays. That is the nature of CS. And, you know, provided they can actually do it and recoil control. And you know, I've always been critical of that. I think he's, I've said, Scream for me is an entry fragger that doesn't like to entry frag. And when he's played more entry roles for G2, that's when they've been at their most effective, in my opinion. When he's been the number one guy, the first guy out, he can open up a bomb site. If he makes aggressive plays on the CT, he's good enough to get a quick peek and get a kill out of it and then fall back and you can play out the rest of the round. He can be a great disruptor. But certainly, just in terms of being consistent, nah. And I know people are going to be like, you've always been saying this about Scream, and he's proved you wrong, and he's been statistically great, and you're just judging it on the major. Well, all right, okay, let's just judge it on the major. He was poor. I mean, he didn't really turn up. And certainly not in this game, which is when you need him. You need Scream in a game to take on Config and Magic. So even though I had G2 winning, I think the combination of things, you know, conspired to fuck up that prediction. So then we go over to Fnatic and Envious. Had Envious, obviously, because I got all my predictions wrong. I'll keep laboring that. I own it because I say predictions don't mean shit. I mean, they really don't. If you find me one person like it was like, oh, I had all of these predictions correct from that day, I would say, well, look, again, what this fucking wonder dog shit proves is that you can just throw a fucking dart in a board and be right more often than somebody that thinks and theorizes and takes all the evidence into account. Because obviously, if upsets never happened, predictions would be easy. And upsets do happen, and there's so many factors in something like Counter-Strike. All of my predictions were made blind before the maps were in. You know, there's lots going on. So I don't give a fuck. All the people who's, ah, you don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, well, okay. I mean, I do, but predictions wouldn't be a measurement of that. And I always point to Artosis, one of the most knowledgeable StarCraft analysts that there's ever been, very rarely got his predictions right. I mean, it was called the Artosis curse. So there you have it. Anyway, so Fnatic. Envious. Strange one this was, you know, goes to Cobblestone, which was when Cash was left. I think Cash might have been the slightly better game because I feel that Envious and moved away from Cobblestone. But let's talk about just the Fnatic performance. Twist's first big performance. Olofmeister steady away, Krim steady away, and you know, Disco and Dennis. Even level pegging, very sort of strange to see Envious have like this pretty decent T side and still lose. You know, like they got their rounds. Apex on fire, looking great. It's just a bit strange to me to sort of see them drop off. And Kenny S, I think he had a good tournament overall. But yeah, this Fnatic game was a bit of an aberration. For me and for Fnatic to win it and win it in the style that they did, it was fairly comprehensive. It was 16-11. I think it does show that the core talent of Fnatic is going to be potentially good. Because I mean, over at Godsent, Flush is still killing it, and if JW is the one that's going to come back, he's the only question mark in that team. Everyone else is actually at a good level of form, and if they can get past all their personal differences, Fnatic could be great again. But I was disappointed in this, and I think this is kind of typified. The Envious story that NBK has fluctuated. When he's been good, he's been very good. When he's been ineffective, it's told. Apex has been fucking great. I can't wait for this French shuffle now. Because if everybody takes the form, it's the side that's been reported, right? If everybody takes the form they're in now, that's gonna challenge to be a top three team in the world. You know. That's if everybody plays at the level they're at now individually in that team, they're gonna be quite a fucking shock to a lot of the established teams right now. But it's kind of the same old story. You know, Sixer, he's not there to frag. He's kind of been put into like Duncan talked about it on the broadcast, so I won't labor the point. But when you are that fifth wheel, when you are the guy that gets the unpopular positions, doesn't get to play to their strengths, everyone else is made to look good, it's just hard. You're just there. All you have to do is kind of frag, and sometimes you're not even getting to do that because you're out of position, you're rotating, you're not comfortable, you're picking up even different weapons, you're dropping for other people. It kind of sucks. But sure, I think in this game he probably wasn't good enough. And there's constant question marks about it. I mean, ultimately, it's not going to matter because one thing I do think is Sixer all, and he'll end up playing with fucking Devil, you know, and those guys probably or something. You know, he's not going to be in a tier one French team after Envious. So congratulations to Fnatic. You know, obviously secure legendary spot, quite an achievement with all the problems they've got. Then the next game was the dumpster fire, you know, Liquid versus Mousesports. Fuck me, I had no idea how bad Mousesports were. I mean, Liquid are bad, right? I mean, Liquid are unbelievably bad, but Mousesports and just next level garbage. And well, I mean, shit. This is a team that has basically got talent on the roster. You know, I don't even think necessarily. You know, I don't think necessarily, you know, guys like Dennis, for example, are all that bad, right? Like, I don't think they're that bad. Yes, I think overall last year, I think he might have even been statistically worse than Spitty, but right now, in the here and now, don't think he's that bad. But it goes to Nuke. Mousesports have been kind of cock teasing this whole Nuke thing. That yeah, we're gonna play Nuke. We're gonna leave it in the vetoes if it comes up. So you think you must have a plan? You must have a fucking plan. Well, they don't have a fucking plan. They literally don't. You know, they've got definitely ignoring that media, that probably is a media request there. You know, they've they don't have a plan. They didn't have a plan for Nuke at all. They literally left it in and didn't know how to play it. I mean, what the fuck are you doing? You know, where this team needs a coach, it needs a leader, it needs something, you know. And let's just talk about individual levels of performance. Like, first of all, they don't know what they're doing, but Nico and Chris made it competitive. Lowell and Dennis, sure, middle of the pack. Spitty, come on, dude. This is fucking out of control now, mate. I saw a lot of people saying, oh, Spitty's... Because he was upset at the end and clearly emotional. And everyone was like, oh, Spitty, you know, just put in a bad position by the Vita. 1 for 19. Guys, these performances are indefensible. They are indefensible. You cannot come up with some crazy, insane, reverse mirrored logic about how he's not his fault. Let's say this map was on... let's say this game was played on Militia, right? You, as a professional level player, should be able to run around the map not knowing what you're doing and probably win about, you know, a high amount of jewels, if you like. You should still be able to do damage. 26 ADR. And in, I said, already, I think when he, in his 2 for 17 game, he had 22 ADR. You're not even doing damage. You're not even doing the damage for your teammates. What are you contributing? There is no excuse for this kind of performance. And I've said it often. I think Mouse Sports' former manager, the guy who's with Big now, Psycho, as he's called, he's had a pop at me saying, you know, you need all different kinds of players to make a great team. Yeah, you're right. But you don't need bad players to make a great team. And if you want to spin it that there's some way this can happen in Counter-Strike, it's not a fucking NFL franchise. You don't have 40 fucking 50 players and 80 players in the squad, you know? If you can spin it to me that somehow Spitty is doing something that no other player in the world could do in that lineup, I will accept it. But it's bullshit. You're just coming out and defending somebody that you know deep down in your heart of hearts sucks and isn't good enough on the basis that he's in the system, he's under contract, you like him, you know, whatever. And, you know, and I understand that you need difference in role players. I've just been singing Rubino's praises and saying he's actually instrumental in North's success. It's not that I'm fucking all about, frags mean everything. I think Nico can sometimes be quite a destructive force in Mouse Sports, honestly. I think his attitude fucking stinks. But that said, this is, I mean, they were never going to win anyway because they're running around like a bunch of headless chickens. But Jesus Christ, give yourself a fighting chance by able to fucking shoot. You know, like, it's a fundamental part of the game. I'm sick of hearing these excuses about like players who just play bad and everyone goes, oh, they're support players. No, they are bad players and you are giving them the label support players, which is an insult to people who genuinely support their team. To try and excuse it, to try and deflect criticism. So he was abysmal. And absolutely should feel bad. You know, sorry that it's harsh. He should feel bad. This is a major. Mouse Sports are a very storied team. And you're instrumental in why they're failing. Yes, you should feel bad. Meanwhile, Liquid, again, I don't think they had to do anything special here. Elige puts in another functional game. Great stuff. Pimp's been waking up a little bit here. But it just wasn't spectacular. All they had to do was just out-aim Mouse Sports and kind of get their timings right and get their tactics right, which they do because this is a pocket pick for Liquid. This is the one map they've looked like an actual functional team on. So again, it's the fucking terrible veto from Mouse Sports and not really sad to see them go. I think Mouse Sports need to really have a long, hard think about what they're going to do as a team. For problem number one they need to fix, they need a coach, leader, a disciplinarian. They're still banging the tables and arguing with each other. You saw it at the end of the game, you know, it's too emotive, it's too highly strung. That's all well and good when you're winning games, creative tension, but yeah, not good enough. So yeah, I've got Godsent versus Optic, obviously picked Optic. I think most people did. But wow, like what a fucking performance by Godsent. And they remain the most frustrating team, probably in World Counter-Strike right now. You want to predict what they're going to do? You can't. You want to predict who's going to play well outside of Flusher? Maybe not. Sometimes Pronax looks average. Sometimes he looks awful. Sometimes I couldn't even tell you outside of Train what their best maps are. What the fuck is going on at Godsend? It's like just taking a hit of fucking DMT trying to fucking predict what they're gonna do. It's insane. And you know, again, they got the cash pick. Optic, very strange. Like, Optic got maps here, by the way, that they could perform on. They had their Train, they had cash. These are the maps that they perform on, and they failed. So you've got to, first of all, say Optic weren't good enough, because the Optic that won E-League Season 2 and made it to the finals at ECS would have beat teams like this. What they haven't probably spanked on is just Lecro. I mean, shit, this is a breakout, in my opinion. Lecro was good. I remember when I did a video about Godsend, back when I was saying they should be the best team in Sweden on paper, and I was saying that, for me, Lecro is a bit of a middle-of-the-pack player. I don't think he's doing anything spectacular. Well, actually, this guy has been a revelation at this major, and a very happy surprise. He has... Like, the things that he brings to the team, it's not just necessarily about fragging, which I think, obviously, he does particularly well, but it's the types of frags he gets. For example, you can see it yourself. You don't need to be a high-level analyst or particularly have a deep understanding of Counter-Strike to realize it. This is a guy who, on the pistol rounds, will pick up a deagle and he'll put it to work. He'll get kills with it. And not just, you know, a kill at the end when he's baiting his team or whatever. I'm talking about actual impact kills. He can open up a bomb site with a deagle. He can take guns away at the end of a round when they try and hunt him down for whatever reason with a deagle. He's had some hugely impactful match, not match winning, but certainly momentum shifting rounds with pistols alone. That's worth its weight in gold. And when you think about some of the players that Optic have had, you know, think about Stanislaw and how effective he used to be with pistols. They should really understand. I mean, they will definitely have an understanding of why this is a huge boon to have in your team. The fact that he's now, you know, doing it with rifles and everything else and really looks accomplished and is kind of like that second guy into the site, like on mop-up duty, been really enjoying it. And when you add it to what Flusher can do, still one of the best clutch players in World Counter-Strike. JW's been hit and miss, but in this game was a hit. Schneider hit and miss, landed in this game. This is why Godsend are inconsistent, because ultimately, this sounds like such a stupid observation, hear me out. The bedrock of their team is almost inconsistency. Flusher and Lecro now are consistent, but there's too many dependent parts. Like, if JW is a notoriously inconsistent player because of his play style, he's aggressive, he peaks, and tries to make crazy plays. We all know they don't come off. Like, you can play solid, steady, pick here, pick one. JW's never going to do that. He's not that kind of player. Never going to have the discipline. So if JW goes off and all of those shots land and all of his decisions happen to be the right one, cosmically at that time, Godsend are going to be good. Pronax is, again, he is just, in terms of aim, not good enough. In terms of fragging, not good enough. In terms of almost everything to do with the actual mechanics of the game, he's not good enough. I haven't seen anything tactically to make me think that they couldn't get a better choice of in-game leader. And I'm sorry to say this about Marcus, because I think he's one of the great in-game leaders, you know, but Godsend, they suffer because if an inconsistent play by JW fails and then Schneider tries to make a play as well and that fails, now you've got Lecro, Flusher and Pronax at the end of a round in a 3-on-3. Well, you can't bank on Pronax, so you're immediately at a disadvantage. Once Pronax is out and you're in that position where the numerical advantage is against you, you get pushed, you get pulled, you get picked apart. These are where the failings are, and unfortunately, Pronax has to understand now in this day and age that it's inexcusable to be one of the statistically worst pros if you want to be a high-level player, and it's definitely not going to work in a team where you have inconsistent players who have this flamboyant and erratic play style. But that said, they made mincemeat of Optic. Optic go out. You know, I thought Rush had a great major. I think he was let down a little bit by some of the other guys who weren't bad, but were inconsistent. Maybe this was just a bit of pressure. Maybe it was bad luck. I mean, they did play a lot of good teams. So I will say that. But, you know, if you get your maps, I think Optic probably should have made it to the Legends spot, actually. So a bit disappointed. Be interested to get their thoughts on it. I'll probably have a chat with them at some point. You know, talk to Tarek or Stan or some, or Rush, and just pick their brains, because they're really cool guys. And I wish them all the best, and I think they'll bounce back. I don't think this is the end of Optic by any means. I still think they're going to be a world force. But yeah, I think they can only really blame themselves in this, and it'd be a little bit disingenuous to suggest they got unlucky, because they had good luck with the VOs. And good luck with it, and good luck with some of the teams they played after the initial Astralis and VP stuff. Astralis SK, wow, what a fucking match! One of the matches in the major, hugely enjoyable. What can you really say about this other than you know, it was just back and forth, showed all of Astralis's strengths. Device again, monster performance from him. I keep saying it about Glaive, the game of his life. Yeah, he's actually really, really good at fragging. People need to realize this. Cold Zera, an absolute animal, just tearing people apart. 35 kills again. Fur, 29. When these guys go off, you're going to really struggle to put SK to bed. I mean, they're too good, you know? They're just, like, ridiculously good. And even though Fallen's had a quiet major by his ridiculously high standards, what was good about this game is SK looked like a unit. Fox was performing. Taco was performing. Everybody's performing in the individual level that they needed to. And what's crazy is this was a Dust 2 game. Astralis should have been clear favorites for this. Fuck all the standing bullshit. SK Gaming, this is a middle of the pack map for them. Yes, they can win games on it. They can beat North American teams on it. Whoop-de-fucking-do. Astralis, the Danes, they were one of the irresistible forces on Dust 2 if you go back like 18 months. They were a team that would just run over fucking teams on this map. Well, didn't happen here. And SK's fortitude was something to behold. So just a fantastic story here. Astralis did get there in the end, obviously, as we know. Spoiler alert. But SK Gaming, I thought this was the definitive performance. This is their best performance here. Not just because of the nature of the team that they beat, but because of the nature of everybody starting to perform. And if they take that level into their games, I think moving forward, I think it's fucking good news. I think it's a good time to be an SK fan. They could really do the unthinkable and do three in a row. Caveat, I don't think they will, but if everybody performs to this level, if they can finally find that place for Fox, which they did very much so in this map, and a lot of you in the comments made the point, Fallen didn't really drop the AWP in the game lost in Na'Vi. I went back, had a look. Yeah, you were right. I still feel they're giving Fox kind of positions that maybe Fallen and other player and Taco might want to kind of fill in for. So they've definitely made an adjustment to accommodate him rather than giving him what's left over. But as I said, I feel if this is the future, if this is what it looks like for SK, could be a deep run. I mean, it would be a hell of a story. SK Gaming write those on a daily basis. So next up, obviously, we had, I'm trying to speed up a little bit, actually, because I've already taken too long, Gambit versus FaZe. And I had FaZe for this one, kind of stand by that. Saw some insane, retarded hate threads. Why do you hate Gambit? I definitely don't hate Gambit. I feel that, the great story about this is since Zeus joined and Adrin gets to be a little less cerebral and they've been given a different approach, to what they were doing under Hooch. You know, everyone's kind of stepped up a little bit. Still think Moe's a little bit too inconsistent for me. And Hobbit, you know, by every measure has had an inconsistent major. As you'd expect, young player breaking through, first major. But Adrin, holy fucking shit. And if you go back and you look at his LAN performances, I mean, he's actually always been good at LAN. I mean, that's the benefit of experience. But this is like a next level. This is like a jump above. And basically, he was the difference maker. You know, 34 kills, just monster numbers across the board, 124 ADR. So many clutch rounds, and in a 16-14 game, even one clutch round, as you know, is vitally important. And, you know, FaZe, This isn't a bad defeat by any stretch of the imagination. It was another close game. I think FaZe's margin for failure is decreasing. I think what's been happening with Carrigan being able to frag and feeling confident to kind of put it on him and not rely on his stars so much, it's very interesting. Alu remains resurgent, definitely a top AWPer in Europe right now on current form. And yeah, I think actually I might want to see just a little bit more from Rain and AZ. Just a little bit more, just like an extra 1%. And I think that's going to put FaZe over the top and make them a top tier team. Because make no mistake, Gambit are fucking good. Gambit are a really good side. And definitely deserve to be in the legendary spot. I'm super happy for them. I think they've developed young talent. I think, yeah, you know, with Hobbit and everything and the experience of Zeus and Adrian and Dozier, this is really exciting to see. I think I made this point. I think we've got so many good young players coming through. You look over at Flipside, like Electronic and there's a few other names. You know, think about the Chopper at Vegas Squadron and stuff. This could be like the emergence of a new CIS kind of era for Counter-Strike, kind of like what we saw back in the past. When I think it was DNS and you know, obviously Na'Vi and other fucking teams whose names escaped me from back in the ether of 1.6. You know, you had all these good players. You had all these good players from Russia, the Ukraine, Kazakhstan, and they were all just making these mixed teams and fucking people up and creating upsets at 1.6 events. Wouldn't it be great to have that again in CSGO? All the indicators are there that 2017 could be a really good year for the CIS region in Counter-Strike. And Gambit are going to be that flagship, you know? Gambit and Na'Vi, right? That'd be fucking great. Oh, and just as a point, Zeus being in Gambit, if they can win and Na'Vi can win and they got in that... That's got to happen. Like, I don't even care if they have to rig it. Fuck it. Like, that's the story, right? I want to see that as a CS fan. I want to see the return of Zeus. That's just... What an emotional game that would be. So after that happened, there was the redraws. North Godsent, what a fucking game. Shout out to Config for that 1 HP knife. I mean, it's so stupid. If I was the manager of the team, if I was the coach, I would be reading him the riot act. I literally would. I'd be like, you never do that again, you know? And it's fucked up because it's a great moment. It's a great moment in Counter-Strike. Everyone's going to remember that. It's in line. I think it could get a graffiti, honestly. I think it's that fucking good. And just balls of steel. I've never seen anyone be that composed in that situation. And for a young player to do that, holy shit. But you could see from the reaction of his teammates, like Cajun's like, what are you fucking doing, mate? If he turns around and fucking just puts one bullet in your body, you know, he could even shoot you in the big toe and you are dead. And you're doing this in a major where we're fighting for our tournament life. It's not fucking cool, you know? So definitely, like, just really, you know, North didn't impress me overall. As I said, MSL and Pronax, like, just going at it. I made the joke on the broadcast. If this had been settled by a 1v1 between the two of them, no fucker would have died. We'd still be here. We'd still be doing it. So they definitely need to work on their own individual level of performances. I don't accept the excuse that being an in-game leader reduces you to this level. But also, just pointing this out, Godsent were in the ascendancy. You know, Lecro was going off, JW was going off, Flusher was going off. This was happening. All of the parts in Godsent were firing. JW's last two games were really, really good. Flusher made so many clutches again. Like, it makes you go back. We all know about the clips and everything. It does make you go back and wonder, though, like, just how smart this fucker actually is. And I'm not going to wind back anything I've ever said, but this dude fucking is one of the most intelligent players I think Counter-Strike's ever produced. But Rubino in this game, like, he's dug them through again. Like, I don't think North are going to particularly... Anders is living in some fucking fantasy land where it's like a North Astralis final or something. But... yeah, I don't, you know, I don't, they've not impressed me. I mean, they've been winning ugly, I suppose. That's good. But fuck me, Rubino, what a legend. You know, what a fucking legend this guy is. Just go back and watch how he plays this game. Watch how many times a round is lost and he gets two kills, three, and they're back in it. And he does it through clever positioning. He does it through clever use of flag. Just go and watch it. I would actually like, I know some people watch my stuff. There's a CSGO demo review guy. Obviously, I know for a lot of stuff you do, you're looking at Overwatch stuff. Just somebody put a video together of Rubino's performance on this and break it down and show everything he does right. I'd do it myself, but no one would take it credibly. Yanko, somebody, please do this. This is an instrument. This is the archetypal support player performance. This is fucking great. So, Godsend in the last two games show some promise. But yeah, they made a run for their back. They lost some games in this they shouldn't have, and yeah, that's the end of that team pretty much. I'm a believer in the Swedish shuffle. FaZe Envious, FaZe too good in the end. Kenny S back to the Titan days of Elo Hell, and very impressed with this. Again, it's on Nuke. I think we can safely say now FaZe can do Nuke very well. And Envious in the end, at the end of the day, they can't. And it's interesting because way back, the French really innovated how to play Nuke in other iterations of the game, but not in this one. And you know, you want to talk about all the same stuff. Real happy for Kiyoshima. Obviously, me and Kiyoshima are pretty tight, and he's a really good, you know, he's a fucking funny dude. Thought it was great what Smick said on the broadcast. He's gone from being a problem to the solution. Obviously, Carrigan brought him in to be this role player. There were great consistency across the board for all of FaZe. But again, Alu just was what gave him that extra edge, that extra firepower. For all of Kenny S, you know, doing what he did, Apex wasn't really able to get his entries going in this. I feel maybe Nuke isn't a map that he feels comfortable on. I thought MBK was okay. Happy with that Ultra Lurk. Definitely did have an impact in some rounds, but less in others. That's the nature of the beast. Kenny S, fucking so good. And Sixer again just looked out of sorts, you know, just didn't really look to have the focus on the understanding of the map, and yeah, kind of was adrift. So yeah, I mean, not much to say about it. FaZe will be looking forward to being in the Legends. Envious is done, and that's that. And then the f last match again, because I'm pressed for time. Astralis Liquid, fuck me, Liquid, wow, you've got to be ashamed. You know, like to play this poorly. It's not even like, okay, you should be losing this all day. When you're just letting device, I don't even know what it was. It was some fucking insane fucking stat he had, like some insane you know, kills per death. When you are just letting a elite level player style on you and nobody can do anything about it, it's just embarrassing, you know? 29 for 6, 149 ADR, 2.32 HLTV rating. And meanwhile, even Allege was quiet in this game. You know, who's going to step up and take the game by the scruff of the neck for Liquid? Who's going to say, guys, we fucking got this? And I watched them shut down while this was happening. So, not a great draft. They used to be good at Mirage. You know, they don't play it so much these days. But where was the communication? Where was the talk? Where was the motivation? Nobody was talking. Nobody was doing anything. I've said this for a while. There's internal issues in Liquid. You need. You know, I feel sorry for guys like JDM who are positive. You know, who do want to. Hiko too. Guys who want to talk it out. Be like, come on, let's win. We can do this. You know, blah, blah, blah. When you're losing round after round after round and nobody's talking, you all know that's the death of a team right there. You all know that is the fucking. That's what lose. You know, that's proof that they're gonna lose games. So. I was just embarrassed for Liquid, honestly, at this. It showed the gulf in class, but it also just showed how motivation has kind of gone from the Liquid project. Nobody's going to take ownership. Nobody's going to take responsibility. Nobody's going to step up and be a leader for that team. And for all of Allegius' strengths as a phenomenal talent, he ain't a leader. That's the one thing he doesn't have. That's why, again, if you were to give me a choice and you were to say, hey, do you want to take Stewie 2K or you want to take fucking Elite? I go with Stewie 2K every day of the week. I feel mentality-wise, I feel he's a much better pick. And that isn't to say he's perfect or flawless in that department, but I think his story over the course of 2016 shows you this kid, that kid is what you want. That's what NA Counter-Strike needs more of. Elise is phenomenally talented, but, you know, where's the mental fortitude, you know? Whatever, fuck it. You know, the game was so unbelievably one-sided, embarrassingly so. Hard to believe this was a decider, you know, to see who gets a legend spot. It looked like a fucking qualifier game. And, you know, Liquid go out, back to the drawing board for them. Pretty sure we'll see some roster changes incoming because They bring in Zeus. They didn't look to have a strong veto. They didn't look to have any particularly strong tactics. I don't know if that's an indictment of Zeus or whether the players were on board with what they wanted to do. Once the game starts, I mean, players can just say, we're not going to listen. You know, so very hard to judge the impact of a coach, but certainly you can say he's had no impact at all, not through want of trying. But yeah, over, Astralis through. So let's get into the games that we're going to see tomorrow. Navi Astralis, I'm fucking so annoyed. I'm so irritated by this because Astralis shit in the bed to get this far has set Navi and Astralis. This should be a final, right? Navi being my pick, Astralis being Duncan's and everyone else's does irritate me. We're going to have this in the quarterfinals and it would look like Navi never had a chance. Let's be clear. Navi can beat every other team. Astralis is the only outlier for me. That said, I know Na'Vi are feeling this is their time. They're feeling refreshed from the boot camp. I did see Astralis really struggling. And keep in mind, probably the team that wins this could be the winner overall of the major. There's a couple of outliers based on matchups, but certainly they would be the strong favorite. So I'm going to stick to my pick of Na'Vi. I never dial back my picks. You know, I think a lot about them. I always thought Na'Vi could go on to be the best team in the world. I think, but it's interesting, isn't it? The two best teams never to win a major meet each other in the quarterfinals. Someone's going to continue that dubious legacy. I hope it's going to be Astralis. I don't mean that in a bad way. I just want to be right with my picks. But it's going to be interesting to see what happens mindset-wise. Because Na'Vi, people forget this. We talk about World Chokers. We talk about Liquid. We talk about Astralis. Do you remember Na'Vi? They fucking choked a bunch as well. You remember how they would get to finals and they would be runners-up and they would do strange drafts and they would lose tournaments that looked like they were favorites to win? People just forget that. People have just erased that from their fucking brains. And there's numerous examples of this. And that's not to mention the fucking capitulation that happened in the at the major in Ohio at the start of the year. So yeah, pretty fucked up that this is the quarterfinal, but then again, pretty fucking amazing that this is the quarterfinal. So super psyched for that game. First one as well in the Fox Theater. Talk about starting strong. Then you have Fnatic versus Gambit. Wow, what a fucking game this is. Now, I'm probably going to throw the curveball in here and I'm going to go for Gambit. And you're going to be like, well, that's that over. The first time you back Gambit, they're destined to lose. But why would I pick Gambit over Fnatic? Well, let me tell you. First of all, I think the just relief of getting to the legend spot, which is all Fnatic really wanted to achieve, the fact they definitely got a roster change coming and everything else, you know, I think that's going to make individual, you know, all the players that know they're out feel that their obligation is done. We got you your legend spot, right? Don't ask too much more of me. And sure, the core are going to want to go far. It's all about prize money now. I'm playing for pride. But Gambit are in another mindset. This is Gambit's time to build a fucking legacy. This is Gambit's time to have that run in the tournament. That was unthinkable maybe 3 months ago. This is the time to really, you know, fly that flag for CIS, Counter-Strike, and show that they've arrived. And honestly, I think they're going to fucking do it. I think this could be like, yeah, sure, a 2-1 at a Gambit, close games. But I'm gonna double down and go for Gambit here. I think there's something happening at this major that we're going to look back on and have a better understanding to contextualize it. But I just feel as well, the problems in Fnatic, they're always going to be competitive on maps. I think Gambit might have the stronger map pool, honestly. I think there's some shared maps that I would give a slight edge to Gambit on. So it's going to be interesting to see. But I think if Gambit veto correctly, get the series that they want, I think they win. I think Fnatic can definitely take a map, but I mean, I think Gambit are going to edge it over Fnatic. Then you've got Virtus Pro versus North. It's over for North. There's no way they're beating Virtus Pro. There's just two. Virtus Pro, like, here's the thing. They've played these games. They've beaten some really, really solid teams. And Neo hasn't had to show up yet. And Bialy hasn't had to show up yet. So it's been snacks and Taz, pretty much, you know. So head for the fucking hills, because North are going to get blown the fuck out. There's just no doubt in my mind. I think everyone's been really overestimating North. And they're going to be like, yeah, majors, yeah, woo, woo. MSL, like I say, is an idiosyncratic in-game leader. And Virtus Pro are just going to pick them apart, turn the screw, apply that psychological pressure. Virtus Pro has the deepest map pool of any team at the major. They can exploit anywhere where North want to go. Wherever North want to go in terms of their best maps, there's no doubt for me that Virtus Pro can beat them. So, yeah, I think Virtus Pro comfortable. And then, obviously, FaZe versus SK. Good Lord. You know, the crazy thing with this is, because they've already played, FaZe having played SK, and they should have won that game, and they lose in overtime. I really don't know. I feel this is too close to call. Because SK beating Astralis, yes, that is a huge result for them. But I still think, in a best of three, you would have to back the team that doesn't have a stand-in and a team with a great in-game leader, which obviously they both have. SK do have the better players. God, this is tough. This is really tough. You know, my head is screaming pick SK. It's a safe pick. I'll fly contrary to that. I think FaZe will shock the world and they'll nick it 2-1 crazy series. Just on the basis, I gotta keep saying that SK Gaming are a great team, but no great team can do it with somebody who knows they're not gonna be in at the end. So yeah, I know Fallen thinks they can win this, but I'm gonna say FaZe are gonna edge it. I think this will be a fucking insane series. So there you go. So there are my picks, there are my predictions. This was a slightly longer vlog. Obviously, there's more to go in. See the sun shifting in the background. I got to go do some media stuff, so I'm going to love you and leave you. Thanks a lot for taking the time to listen to this. I don't know if anyone gives a fuck, as I said, but you know, I'll put them out for those that want to hear it. We get back to some normal content. Sam's here now. We're getting set up. We're building our little mini studio. We're going to start recording some shows and pumping that out after the major. So thanks for continuing to support the YouTube channel, supporting what I do, and of course, supporting the major and E-League, because we've been super happy with the way the community have engaged with us. And we're looking forward to more of that as we move forward. Anyway, take care, enjoy the rest of your day, and I'll see you at the Fox Theatre tomorrow.